Hey, let's go ahead and then we'll start getting started, at least by introduction, just so I can kind of know who's here. And great to see you. And how many of you are students here at the seminary? I'm just curious. Okay, and what year are you?
I just started.
Okay.
I'll be finishing this year as well.
Great. Okay, and what are you going to do then? Wonderful. Oh, that's great. This will be, some of this stuff will be very helpful for you. You know, church planning and church revitalization have so many crossovers. And, in fact, you know, we're all technically, anyone that's a churchman, anyone that's in a church is technically, is always going to have some church revitalization aspects to them. Churches are always to be reforming. What I mean by that is, not theologically, but, we're always to be looking at how can we have more health to us. And as we focus on one area, other areas usually slide. And a church is always like adjusting. Like, you know, the next year they're like, oh, wow, I need to, we need to focus on prayer. And you're really kind of going on prayer. And then you're like, whoa, wow, we need to focus on evangelism. And it's almost like it's got a, you know, like a straight line of, let's say that's what church health is. And there's this circle right over it, and you're constantly pushing that circle, but it always moves. It's like a pushing a ball underwater. And so some of these things today, as we're going to be talking about identifying our areas of really church planning, is actually becoming more culturally intelligent. And we need to always be doing that. So we got two seminarian students who, tell me a little bit more about yourself. Where are you at? Oh, wonderful. Okay. Pastor, I know you.
Yeah, 16th year at Maranatha Flint.
Yeah, love it. And where are you guys from, this row?
Sophomore at Bob Jones.
Okay.
Sophomore at Bob Jones. Seminary at Bob Jones.
Okay. I know Jason. All right. Where are you from?
Grand Rapids. Small church, rural.
Rural. Great. Yeah. Okay. Where are you from?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm from Dallas Theological
Seminary. Okay. Wonderful. Glad you're here.
Bald Lake.
Okay.
Bible Church.
Okay. Are you the pastor?
No, I'm not. It's our senior pastor. I lead our missions ministry.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. And then, yes, sir?
Former student seminary in Ann Arbor.
Okay. Where are you at? What church are you at?
Ann Arbor Baptist.
Okay. And then, okay. I know you. All right.
I'm a junior at Liberty University, but I'm in training for a great Bible.
Oh, wonderful. I got you. I know you. I know the guy in the back. Okay, where are you at? Yes. Let's plan church, dude. All right. Benjamin, where are you from?
I'm from Arizona, but I'm here.
Okay, that's right. Anthony, you're a student here?
Yep.
And then Tim, again?
Assistant pastor in Coral,
Michigan. Okay, great. Well, let's we'll kind of get started. Make sure you have some notes. My name is Will Galkin, and I'm one of the pastors at Gospel Grace Church. Really heading towards the pastor of church planning and just trying to help us stay aggressive about looking for areas to plant a church. We're not experts by any means, and we're just churchmen who are trying to be faithful and yet really steward the things that God's given us. And we've been blessed. The Lord's been very kind to us in a very needy area of the United States of America. And he's given us resources. He's given us insights. He's given us open doors. He's done miracles. And so we want to steward that. We planted Gospel Grace Church in 2012. Without going into details, we chartered actually in 2013. And then we've also been a part of one church revitalization. There was a church that faithful pastor. I met him when I was 5 years old. I grew up in Twin Falls, Idaho, and so that's about 3 hours away. And this pastor kind of was up and down in attendance, you know, the church, Trinity Baptist Church, somewhere between 30 and 50 and 30 and 50 and just kind of like this. And he was getting to retirement age, and we were looking at planting a church down the area, and he said, well, let's partner. And so there was another church planting team that we were kind of helping and working with. And so they were part of that church revitalization. And presently, there's a couple of churches, church plants kind of in the queue, but probably one is the most present. And we have three guys that have been in our church as interns and now are going through our elder track and elder candidacy, and we're hoping to launch them out. And they were going to go just the three of them, but as they began to really look at their gift sets and do this really self-assessment, they began to have some question marks. And so the Lord has provided another person that maybe could join their fourth. And so we're in the middle of really trying to see, hey, is this a good sink? But if it is, and if God puts this team together, then we'd love to see them plant a church in about maybe about a year. And it'd just be so thrilling. And maybe about 14 months, but it'd just be so thrilling just to see a church birthed out of Gospel Grace. And this one would probably have a pretty deep deep DNA imprint of Gospel Grace into it. And so it would probably be the first test, of what if we really believe what we've been saying, that we want to be a church-planting church. And so we're excited to see how God, what God does with that. I say that because throughout this, I'm going to give you lots of illustrations about Salt Lake City and Gospel Grace and all that kind of stuff. And I want you to understand that Gospel Grace, that's our local church that God's called us to. He's not called you to Gospel Grace, right? At least right now. But if you talk to me long enough, I might recruit you, right? But don't read in that I'm saying that we're the experts, that you have to do everything like this. I'm just using Gospel Grace as really an example. And then hopefully you'll be able to take some of the principles, some of the truths that God's helped us learn, and just incorporate them in your own context. And because God's not called me to pastor your church, right? God's not called me to participate in your ministry directly as a church planner. And so I don't want to force those things on you, but I want you to kind of get the feel for it. Now, as I plowed into this, really I should have called this cultural exegesis, or maybe I like another term, cultural intelligence, so that because I think there's truths to this that every single one of us need. Like this is not just for somebody that might one day plant a church. This is actually something every church ought to do in seasons. It's like every 3 years, every 4 years, every 5 years, that you do a deep dive to see how is it that your culture around you has changed? How is it that the demographics have changed? What's new in the city? You know, how many of you have the best of intentions to like know your neighborhood, and yet sometimes out of busyness, you're plowing deep and you forget that there's people around your church, right? And so that's all of us. And so really the tools that we're going to get today are going to be tools that you could apply in your local church ministry no matter where you're at. I think with the gospel needs everywhere, isn't there? Anyone been in a foreign context and you're just so overwhelmed and you're like, your heart's just pounding out of your chest, like you just wish you had two lives so you could serve there too? I mean, do you ever get in a conversation with somebody and you're like, even last night, Lucas and I were up late, we're just working, and the hotel clerk, she was working on something, and we just talked to her just for like maybe 2 minutes. And you're just hearing her story, and you're like, oh, wow, she's got three kids. She's doing the late night shift so she can be a mom. And you just know there's a whole story there. And you just almost wish that there was a way to a multiverse, right? And like one of us could just like kind of, spawn over here and stay and shepherd this person to Jesus, right? And there's needs everywhere. So how do we identify where we should really spend our life? It's the vex of a shepherd. Where, how can I know? I mean, I remember I grew up in Idaho, and so I go to Northland Baptist Bible College, and then my freshman year, the basketball team's going on this missions trip, and I was so naive. I mean, I can't play basketball. I walked right up to the coach, and I said, can I go too? And he looked at me, goes, sure. And I go to the Bahamas. I mean, this is the first time I've really been out of the United States. And we're just with the Islanders, and we're just like, the team's playing basketball. I'm just going like row to row to row in the bleachers, just giving people the gospel. And I'm just remembering my heart just wishing, I wish I could stay here. And then I went to Romania that summer, my next big trip. I mean, I just was like, this is awesome. You go on a mission trip, I'll go there too. So I went to Romania, and I remember I mean, it was 1992. The wall had just come down. I mean, there were people crushing me to get Bibles. I wish I could stay there. I graduate from Idaho. I mean, I graduate from Northland, and I go to Africa for 4 months. And I remember being in these villages and these children. I mean, it's like there's no one. There's no gospel light. I remember landing back in the United States thinking I'm burdened, but I'm not called. Do you guys grasp that? So how do we identify targets that we should plant? But there's, in fact, how many of you know an area somewhere in the United States that you just find your heart beats for, that you just wish there was more churches there? So where should you go? What are some things? What are some questions? Without peeking ahead that intro paragraph, what are some questions that the church planter, the church revitalizer, the faithful churchman needs to ask? How about, is this region already saturated with churches? What's the health of the churches in the area? Is there a confessional need for a church? Are there churches that need and want to be revitalized? You know, the list of questions is endless. And yet, if you could walk away from this session saying, what I need to do is I need to ask questions, then guess what? I'm going to think this is a success. If you walk away from here and you're like, okay, I need to ask questions about the culture around my church. I need to ask questions about the target area that our church wants to plant to. I gotta ask better questions. Then guess what? This is a winner-winner. Because what we want to do is we want to help us ask questions, but then we want to help us know where we can go to really understand our culture. How do we exegete it? And what are the tools that we can use to gain really a cultural information, the cultural information that we need so we can have this cultural intelligence. As I give us this, I'm really going to work off of some presuppositions. If this was a longer session, if I had a week to talk with you through how to do this, we would kind of set it up with a coaching and we kind of walk our way through it. And I'd really target three things. I'd target up, in, and out. Because really the first presupposition, even as we look at a target area, is that there is an upward motion, that we are seeking the Lord's will on this, and that we're being honest with ourselves. So up and that we're honest, like, who am I? What am I made to do? Do I fit this area? I mean, honest. Are other people speaking into my life? Up, in, and then out. And so really that first presupposition, we're going to assume that the potential church planters already demonstrate a prayerful dependence on God that results in a willingness to go anywhere that God desires. We can sometimes look at church planting as a corporate venture. I'm a strategic guy. I like to plan. I like to plan and tell other people what to do. You know what I mean? I like that. But sometimes we read the books and we're like, okay, we'll go here and we'll do this. We'll do this and then we'll do this. And then of course we'll do this. Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go into such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears a little time and then vanishes. Instead, what you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we'll do this or that. We're from the Intermountain West, and the last couple of years we've been in a little bit of a drought, and it's there's conservation efforts. People say don't water on this day, water on this day, and let's use less water, and those are all good things. I mean, and we're trying, and even the farmers were limited in some of the water that was accessible to them. Well, this last winter, in like 7 snowstorms, God totally filled all the reservoirs. You know, we think about some of these church planting ventures, and we're so foolish to think that somehow we as a speck of creation can somehow do what the Creator can do in just a few snowstorms. I can't tell you in this church planting adventure how many times God's intervened in our on our behalf. We met a person. We talked with a person. We ended up going and meeting with this person. And I'm just going to presuppose as we're looking at target areas that you're going to be a person that's prayerfully dependent on God. Paul modeled this Deo Volente. That's what the Latin phrase that theologians will talk about this, what you ought to say as the Lord wills, Deo Volente. I mean, Paul modeled this in Acts 16, right? He's like, he wants to go to Asia, wants to be in Asia, wants to be an Asian. What does God do? God sends this vision to him, the Macedonian vision. No, go here instead. Go to Greece. Paul, if you read the whole context of Romans, why did Paul want to go to Rome? Do you guys know? Why do you want to go there? Well, he wants to go to Rome to get some cash so he can go to Spain. He wants to go there to get support. He wants a base of operation so he can go preach the gospel in Spain. And yet there's this problem, the Jews and the Gentiles, they got issues with each other. The Jews and Gentile Christians, they got issues with each other. And if they're divided, then how can they support his mission venture? And so at the end of his book, he's saying this. He goes, hey, I want to use this as a jump off point to Spain. But he says, by God's will. We don't know. Did he ever make it? You know, don't think so. But in this Deo Volente spirit, I believe God's called me to be a part of urban church planting in the Intermountain West right now. That's why I want to spend my time in developing teams for urban context. That's just what I think I'm supposed to do. Last month, there was a 50th anniversary for a rural church planting network in Utah. And since that's my role of church planting, I drove the 2 hours to meet up with these guys. They met in Price, Utah, little town, about 2,000-4,000. And there was about 75 folks there, and I sat there, and whatever we're doing is the most important. Did you know that? And my brain, I've got all my tasks. I'm sitting in this little municipal like community center, and I'm sitting there, and it took me probably about 20 minutes to stop thinking about me. And these guys are getting up, and they're telling stories of planting churches in towns with absolutely zero gospel witness. And my heart just was like, wow, this dude for 30 years has been preaching the gospel and he's seen 4 families come to Christ. You know what? God, the Lord of the harvest, knows where you're supposed to serve. And you got to figure that out. And not everyone's serving in the same spot, right? Because otherwise, it's not going to be a good thing. And so really, at the very core, as we look at other areas, God, where do you want me to serve? God, what do you want me to do? And then we got to be content. Like I can get real. Do you know what's funny? It's like God's blessed us with a lot of resources and stuff, and it's fun and it's exciting. We're in a really fun stage of church planting. I mean, the Lord has just done miraculous stuff. It's awesome. I was just with another group, and I was so covetous. Anyone struggle like that? I mean, I was just so filled with envy. I was like, no way. I want to do that. I want your stuff. I want your stuff to be my stuff. And yet, really, this prayerful dependence, if we don't take time to really pray, because actually, even as we look at target areas, we constantly have to return back to this. What does the Lord of the harvest want me to do? So it's up. Remember those presuppositions. First up, and then down, or in. Honest. God's made every single one of us different. I don't think it's a mistake that I grew up in Idaho. I don't think it's a mistake that I know guys out in Utah. I don't think it's a mistake. I think God's made me for that. I just think that God in his providence wants me to be connected to this church planting team in Salt Lake City. But I think sometimes we forget to be honest. I've seen this happen in assessment times. Like how many of you have ever taken one of those personality tests and you answered the questions in light of the personality that you wanted? And I think that sometimes that's what can happen, even as we get so excited, like, oh, I'm going to go do this. And so now we try to put that lens on. That's what God wants. I'm supposed to do this. And we're not honest about who we really are. I mean, what I mean, and we don't let other people speak in our lives. You know, we know whether or not we're honest by how much we let people speak into our life. If I don't let people speak in my life, I'm probably hiding something. My fear is probably kicked in. I don't want people to know. I don't want people to see. I don't want to, an honest person lets people in, lets people assess them, lets people, speak frankly to them. I mean, we've got this guy that's going to maybe join our church plant, one of our church plant teams, and we're asking hard questions. We're asking his pastors hard questions. We're asking his wife hard questions. We're asking him hard questions. We're paying people to ask him hard questions. Does the church planter have any limiting character deficiencies? Is the wife of the church planter fully on board? Is the church planting family willing, ready to, for the sacrifices that come with living on mission? Does the church planter have a skill set to match the location of his future ministry? Will his education endure the rigors of weekly ministry? Will the church planter be able to preach in a missional context? Does he make disciples? Why does this pastor want to plant a church? You think those are good questions? Can you think of any others? But those are the kind of questions we ought to ask ourselves. If you walked away from this, I said this at the very beginning, if you walked away from this just going, I need to ask better questions. I need to take the time to think for an hour and write out questions. Guess what? This session would be a success. So the presupposition is look up. It's inward. Look inward. Look in. Be honest. And then really we're able now to look out. And that's the point of this. And by the way, the reason why we're taking the time to talk about the presuppositions of up and in is because throughout the whole process of looking out, you're constantly looking up and in. Like as you learn more data, you're gonna look in. As you learn more data, you're gonna pray. You're gonna say, Lord, so what specifically? If you were in the first session that we've done as a team in these workshops, Lucas was taking the time and he was saying, so why plant churches? And he was talking about from a creedal standpoint, from a confessional standpoint. And as he continued on the conversation, that's something that, you start to learn more data and you still go up. You go like, Lord, what do you want? And Lord, am I equipped for this? Lord, what's the need? So up, down, out. Let's exegete the culture. The natural progression for somebody looking to plant a church, it's like, should I go international? Should I go domestic, right? For those that are in the United States, it usually has to do with a background, need, preferences. But as the target area narrows, a proper cultural exegesis must be performed. And, church planters need to understand the demographic, the cultural, and the religious particulars of potential target areas. But we live in an era where there's just so much data for us. I mean, there's so many helps for us to understand the culture around us. The idea of culture, by the way, is just so elusive. I mean, it's just so, what is culture? It's just so ubiquitous. What do I mean by ubiquitous? It's just everywhere. We traveled itinerantly on the road. I think some of you know that. And, this last 10 years, I mean, everything now is online, it's like if you want to do anything, you want to pay bills, you want to find something, you got to get connected. And so for us, it was just so brutal to get connected to the internet, because we'd just be burning through our phone data. And, one of the guys that worked for me, he all of a sudden said, hey, well, I think I found your solution. And it was a Ubiquiti router, a Ubiquiti without going into details of what it was explicitly, but it was an awesome device. And we were able to hook up like the first time. It was three-fourths of a mile away, like the church's router, and we were parked way over here, and he beamed this internet signal from the church all the way to our trailer, and I mean, we're just like loving life, and I thought, what a great name for this router, Ubiquiti. It's everywhere. We could be anywhere and get that Wi-Fi signal, and that's what the world is. The world's culture and the culture around us, it's everything around us. I mean, some quotes about culture, properly understood, culture touches every aspect of how we live in this world. Culture takes the raw materials of nature and creates an environment. Culture affects every part of human life. Another guy said this. This is a little bit, he's a little more verbose. A dynamic pattern, an ever-changing matrix of objects, artifacts, sounds, institutions, philosophies, fashions, enthusiasms, myths, prejudice. Okay, get the point? What is he saying, guys? All embodied in individual people and groups, collectives, and associations of people, many of whom do not know they are associated in books, buildings, the use of time, space, in wars, and jokes, and in food. Okay, what is he saying? It's just culture is just what makes Detroit Detroit, right? What makes Utah Utah? That's what it is. I mean, like tell me the culture of Michigan. What makes Michigan Michigan? I grew up in Idaho, right? I could tell you Idaho culture. It's well, my kids sum it up. For my kids, they're now from Utah. They used to be a third culture kid traveling. Now they're from Utah. When they go to Idaho to visit where I grew up, you know what Idaho sums up for my kids? Ready? Because there's a church that I grew up there. There's their my mother's there, and there's other things there. So my kids sum up Idaho in three words: it's God, grandma, and guns. Because whenever we go, we shoot stuff. So that's what it is, right? So that's Idaho. So I go to Northland. My three roommates are from Michigan. Do you want me to try to sum up the culture of Michigan from my perspective of having three roommates? This is my perspective. The Red Wings, Steve Yzerman, beats people to a pulp, all right? That was in the 90s. I don't know if you know that guy. He used to play for the Red Wings, and he just beat people up for fun. And my roommates would tell me nonstop about this. And they all went to Christian schools, and they were all like, they were kind of wild, and they were kind of jerks. And so if you were to sum up my understanding of Michigan culture, it was hockey, jerks, and wild. That was my assumption. Is that Michigan, or is there more to it? Okay. What about Utah? So I just did my, like, limited cultural exegesis, didn't I? What do you think about Utah? Mormons, mountains, and mamas. All right, what else? What do you think about Utah? Is that it? I mean, that's all I knew. Michigan, all I got is, like Christian school, a lot of Christian school sports, Red Wings. That's all I had. What else do you got for Utah? Anybody else got anything?
John Stockton.
Awesome. The Jazz.
Beautiful skiing, national parks.
Okay. Do you see what we're doing? We're exegeting, and yet we don't really know it, do we? I was limited in my understanding of Michigan, and you're limited in your understanding of Utah. And so what needs to happen is that we need to gain a cultural intelligence. There's a guy that's, he's like saying that there's a problem. There's this preachers that they get so locked in that they forget that they need to continually work at their cultural intelligence. Matthew Kim, he says, so we need a bridge, the text of scripture to our culture. And so he uses bridge as an acronym to help, help preachers research, to help preachers understand the beliefs, the rituals, the idols, the dreams, God, and experiences. That's the acronym he uses for bridge. Like what's going on around me? By the way, you're right. There are quite a few Latter-day Saints in, Utah. That's true. There are some great mountains. There's some skiing. There's five national parks. They say that if we didn't already have five national parks, that two of our state parks would probably be national parks. It's a beautiful state in its own way. You've got, but then you got an intense, did you know this, by the way, about Utah? I'm just going to throw a few things out. Did you know that, we had the first, lesbian mayor of any metropolitan area in the nation? Did you know that? Did you know that, we have, the sixth largest gay pride parade? Did you know that we lead the nation in female attempted suicide? Did you know that we have the highest per capita use of cable subscription porn? Did you know we have the highest rate of psychiatric drug abuse? Did you know that? We got some issues, don't we? But you see, should those flavor us? Should that flavor our preaching? Should that flavor what we speak? I mean, would that help us bridge? I mean, that knowledge, would that help us bridge really our culture when we preach? Let me just do some easy ones. Let's just think about the Mormon context. So we preach through the book of James. What chapter and what passage in James do you think we should be really careful about because of our culture?
Chapter 2.
What is it? Do you know what?
Faith without works
is dead.
Yeah.
Okay. We preach through Ephesians. What text of scripture in Ephesians do you think many Mormons get bludgeoned with by Christians, and so they don't really turn into Charlie Brown's teacher when you say that verse wah 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 wah. And so when we come to that passage, we're gonna have to be extra careful. What can anyone guess? Ephesians what?
2:8-9.
Okay, what about Hebrews? We preach through Hebrews. I mean, I'm going to try to stump you on this one. So Hebrews, can anyone think of what text in Hebrews we're going to have to really think through?
1:1.
The whole book. I mean, the whole book. But specifically, Hebrews 7. What's in Hebrews 7? Melchizedek. Okay, do you know every single one of those that we know our culture well enough? It's pretty obvious. There's Mormons. That all three of those texts, we telegraphed to our people. We said, these are three texts that you should bring a Mormon guest to. Because we know our context, we know that that text speaks to those things directly. What time are we supposed to be done? Oh, awesome. Okay. And so really bridging the gap to those that are around us. So what I want to do is proper exegesis aids the church planner not to import his missional culture from his former ministry context. I watched Dave Dorn Jr. Yeah, it was funny. Last night, what state is Dave Dorn Jr. from? I don't know if you could see that. I mean, just look at the dude. He's from Michigan, all right? And so he's talking to me. Do you know that he has ADD? Did you know he does? Or something. You know, he's just got something like that. And so he's talking to me, and all of a sudden he goes like this. He goes, that's not right. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he walks over to somebody's display who's got something from Ohio State on it. He takes it off the person's display. And he sticks it behind the display, and he comes in and says, that's just not right. Okay, what's going on there? He was judging that display owner. I don't even know the story. But that display owner was bringing something from his missional context and bringing it here, and it was a little bit offensive to poor Dave Jr., right? And really, that's what a proper exegesis of culture does. A proper exegesis of culture, it allows you to connect with those that are around you without necessarily stepping in it. Without causing unnecessary offense. It aids you in not importing your missional culture from a former missionary context. I grew up, I mean, we've had a lot of church planters in the Intermountain West, and I'm telling you, we get some boys, man, they'd be from down south. I mean, they just would come into Idaho, and I'm telling you, they would just tell us what, they'd tell us what for. Yes, they would. And we'd roll our eyes at them. And so proper cultural exegesis, it allows you to not just bring baggage from your other culture. Failure to consider the new culture could result in the church planner missing obvious gospel opportunities in his new context, or the introduction of unneeded ministerial issues from his former context. So to better learn or exegete the local culture, we must research the data, connect the experts, and immerse in the context. All right. So in the big picture, I would say the big picture of this presentation, it would fit with an up, an in, and an out. But if we take the out, the out is actually research, connect, and immerse. All right? You tracking with that? So let's research the data. Church leaders and potential church planners must know the basic demographics of the community. What does demographics mean? It's just the statistical data relating to the population and the particular groups. And you're going to learn with researching the data, you're going to learn age, gender, race, ethnicity, education, income. Simple internet searches give you insight to the community. But there's so much data that you can mine. The Census Bureau, the United States Census Bureau, shares most of this data freely. And but some of us, we find it challenging to interpret it correctly. One, it doesn't take, but you just miss one data set and you could misinterpret data. How many of you have ever, you've been watching the news or something and they totally skew something? Like the majority of people think. And then you've seen that like fine print is like 51% to 49%, right? Well, they're correct, but they're misleading. And so, there's people that can help you. There's statisticians that, you can employ. There's people in it. It's really not that expensive to really employ some of these groups to even mine the data, for you. But as you're researching, I mean, you could just sit behind your computer, seriously. I would actually throw it out to you that why don't you somewhere in this next 6 months schedule, one of your work days is you're just going to research your area. Like you just spend 8 hours, that's what you're going to do. You're going to clock in and you're going to spend 8 hours plowing through whatever data you can find about that. I'll give you some tools with this. Can I throw out some questions that maybe you should consider? You see them in front of you. I just threw these down. I actually got these questions from some groups. I added to some of these questions. I'm going to just throw out, like, I'm going to ask the question and I'm going to pause a little bit and let you think about Michigan, but I'll throw out like Utah stuff, you know, as appropriate. So figure out the history. You know what's funny is I think that some people actually don't even know the history of their city. When I would travel, to different locations, almost every Saturday night, this wasn't like perfectly every Saturday, but most Saturday nights I'd be laying in my bed and I just drove. I'm kind of like wound up. I'd pull up my phone and I go to the Wikipedia page of that town. And I would just read stuff about the town and I would just, you know, and then I'd bring it up. And you know what's fascinating to me is how that there were pastors, like church members go like, yeah. And there would be pastors that tell me like, oh, I didn't even know that. Oh, I didn't know that we had the third highest rate of opioid addiction. Oh, I didn't know that. And you know, it's worth knowing your city, isn't it? So things like when was the city founded? Salt Lake City, 1847. What's the circumstance? Well, we had a bunch of Mormons come. That's how we started. All right. Is the city growing? Yeah, Salt Lake right now is just crushing it. It's like it's collecting Oregon, Washington, and California. why? Tax rates, business model. Is there a large population of immigrants? Actually, we're a refugee city. We're gaining actually a large Islamic contingency right now. Where are they from? Actually, we have a group from Southeast Asia and then a large group from Northern Africa. What's the economic engine of the city? Well, we've got tech, some manufacturing. We're a transit city. What I mean by that is transportation, train, shipping. What's the city known for? Why is the city famous? These are all great questions for us to ask. Research the history and trajectory of the target neighborhood. You know, zero in. Are people moving in? What's the religious, ethnic demographics? I'll show you how to do this in just a minute. Do people want to live in your target neighborhood? You know, right now, like downtown where the three pastors live, three of the pastors that you met here live, we got a serious homeless crisis in Salt Lake City. I mean, it's frustrating. I mean, we have people that are defecating on the church property. There's drug paraphernalia. There's people that are there's tent cities on our property. And you know, how do you deal with that? How do you wrestle mercy versus like safety? I mean, what you know, these kind of things. I mean, how does this impact the people that are coming? How does this impact ladies that have got to go photocopy something at 10:30 at night? Do you think they do it at our church? You see what I'm saying? So take the time. Like ask questions. Like, do people want to live there? What housing options are available? Expensive ones. That's what we got. What are the cultural influencers of the city? Do you know who influences your city? How does your city vote? You know, Utah votes Republican by a landslide on a nation and even as a state, but our local politics, downtown Salt Lake City, is like this, like very liberal core. Well, that plays into what's going on. What are the obvious needs of the city? What are the assets? What are the subgroups? One of our major subgroups that's forming in Salt Lake City is Ex-Mo. What do you think that stands for? Ex-Mormon. And I'm telling you, they're angry people, and it flavors it. What about the healthcare, the education? What is it like to live in a city? What do people like the police? Do people respect the police? Do people do they like the government? Are there organizations that control things behind the scenes? I mean, what are the politicians like? What are the sports? Do people like the sports? I mean, have your sports ever won anything? That was for Michigan. Research the churches and the religious organizations in the area. What churches are there? In Salt Lake City Metro, there's 86 evangelical churches. Well, 86 churches that are somewhat connected to some form of evangelicalism. Their denomination was or has some evangelical presence. Are the churches growing? Are they shrinking? Are they plateauing? What's the newest church plants in the area? I mean, what's the church planting organizations that are at work there? Are there Christian organizations that could be mined or that could supplement, that would join in? Who would be open to planting with you? Let me just give us some of this. We'll look at some of this together. This is a great, the United States Census Bureau just came out with this website. It's much more user-friendly than what was there. And look at this right here. Look at all the data that's at your fingertips. What's the average age? What do you think, Allen Park? Just throw it out there. What do you think the average age is? Quick. Okay. Oh, expired. I loaded this all up last night. Oh, we'll have to start over. We can do that. Okay. Allen Park. Okay. 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 Average age, ready? Drum roll. 42. Okay. Education. Ah, man. 92%. Okay. Poverty. It's pretty low, isn't it? Okay, let's just do a quick one. Let's take an obvious. Okay. Oh, misspelled, but they got me anyway. Okay. How far is Hamtramck from here? Yeah. I mean, population, what do you think, guys? Excuse me, age, I meant. Yeah, very young. Income. Medium income. What is that? $24,000. I mean, these are, what do you think that should do to us? If you're preaching here, do you think some of the data of this would influence your preaching? Without a doubt, it's going to influence your preaching. This fact finder, you got it right there. This is just so easy to go to. The data, do you see how quick that is? It's so helpful. This is worth going through every other year. This is worth you just plowing through this city that you're in. Another one that's really fun. This is actually put up by a private organization, Deloitte, and a university. I can't remember right off the top of my head right now. But they, they put this together and they put it into just some fun ways to look at it, on a lot of the data. And look at, for us, I mean, you look at all the ages, the average age. This was just one of the stats. But look for us, 32 years old. Guess what? Utah has one of the youngest population averages in the United States of America. Should that flavor us? What does that mean? I mean, it means that there's Mormon families that haven't a lot of kids. but do you think that impacts our education? What do you think? Yeah, we've got an issue with education because we've got too many kids. We don't have enough teachers. I mean, these are things that will flavor you. And it's so easy. You could spend, and some of you probably could waste time, but don't waste time, but like invest time so you can be a better a better preach of the gospel. There's groups right here. Let me just show you real quick. New Orleans Seminary with the SBC. They've got the Lavelle Center. And they've put together all the data from the Census Bureau, but they've done it for religious studies. And low cost, you can do some research. So if you're getting ready to plant a church or do a church revitalization, you should reach out to these guys and say, hey, I need a data set about this county, about this group of people. Most of these people have taken most. I mean, there's so many niches of information. So, I mean, somebody's done with crime. Look at this one right here. This is Salt Lake City. You could plug in your area. Okay, should this flavor the preaching of gospel grace when you see these assaults? You see the people arrested? And that's just right around our church. You could type in your area. Then other folks have done some unbelievable work with religious studies. This is Association of Religious Data Archives. And they've taken every county and given the percentage of evangelicals. Okay, look at this, guys. See this right here? So you want to know what the least evangelized evangelical county in the United States is actually Michigan. Is that the tip of the Keweenaw Peninsula? There's some churches in the county below. I actually did the demographics. I researched it. I checked out. There's some churches south, but in the Keweenaw Peninsula, there's in that the most furthest tip of that peninsula. There's no evangelical churches. But then, as I was doing that, I mean, these are all the counties in the United States of America, just at your fingertips. Boy, this one, the Lord was just slamming my heart and really just give me a heart for what He's called us to. You go all the way down, see all these counties. Go all the way down, and you get here, and see there's Keweenaw. You got some Alaska, some that's just because there's no people, but Idaho, Utah, Utah, Idaho, Utah, 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 Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Idaho, Idaho. That's my hood. That's my place. And there's no gospel witness. Do you think this should impact our heart? Should this motivate us? Should this stir us up? Should this cause us to say, I don't want to waste my life? I want to invest my life? I want to do something for Jesus? You know, these kind of things are soul stirring, especially when we connect it to looking up, looking in, and looking out. These aren't just raw statistics. These are souls, aren't they? These are people. These are people that are going to live for eternity somewhere. This religious survey, you could just pour over this. Understand that the churches in your town, understand who's preaching, who's not preaching the gospel. We got all these links for you guys, so don't sweat copping this all down. I love how some people have done the data. This guy, this is a Southern Baptist. He's part of their evangelist group, missional group for the North American Mission Board, and he took the data from these religious studies, and look what he did. He goes, states least reached. Number one, Utah. Look at the rest, all New England, right? And when you can come across, this is like really gospel gold kind of stuff, when you can come across somebody who's taken the months to process data and put it into bite-sized portions. And these are things that are so readily available. It's not like they're trying to hide these from you. It's just most of us aren't taking the time to say, where are they? You know, it'd be great for you to go to like a website like church.org and just type in, what are the churches in my community? What churches are in my small town? What other gospel preaching churches are within 10 miles of my church? I put all the links. You got the, the SBC Gospel Coalition, Acts 29, Mark, 9 marks, just get a feel for the other churches there in the area. So when we're doing this, you do some research, but then, you know, research can only go so far, guys. Like, you can only learn so much with the computer. And that's why you gotta find the storykeepers. You gotta connect with the experts. You know, the internet can tell you only so much about a study, but to correctly identify a target area, the planter must connect his data points with the experts of the city. You want to find the story keepers of the culture. When I'm going to show you some things in a minute of the research we did in Salt Lake City, and we're going to plot out all the different churches, the evangelical churches, and we did a lot of research with this. And there's these swaths, these open areas of places where we want to plant church. But you know what? For us just to look at the data point and say, we ought to plant a church there would be so foolish. We need to actually get boots on the ground and go talk to experts in those swaths of 200,000 people and say, so why aren't there churches here? Well, if you were to drive to one of those swaths that I'll show you in a minute, it's because it's an industrial area. Wouldn't it be crazy to, like, you do all this data research and you're like, okay, we're going to plant a church right here. And then you show up for the first time, you're like, oh, there's no people here. This other one, like, I think it's because it's a hyper-residential area. I don't think there's movie theaters and malls and Costco's. I think there's a whole swath of high-density residential. And so people are like, I don't know if I want to plant a church here. But it's like 200,000 people without gospel light. We got to wrestle with that, but you don't know those things until you put boots on the ground. And when you talk to these experts, looks like my slides got out of order. I wonder who did that. Oh wait, me. And you want to talk to your firemen, your librarians, your mayor, your health professionals. Do ride-alongs like with the cops, and like ask questions like, what are the three best kept secrets, Dave Jr. He texted me and goes, hey, I don't know if you got a free dinner, but you want to go over to Roman Village. Right now it's 55, their 55th year anniversary, and they're like, buy one, get one for 55 cents. I mean, it is great food, man. They make it in. Like, ask people, what are the secrets? What are the, where are the food trucks? Like, that's in Salt Lake, food trucks, you know, like, where are the best? What's the taco stand? What's the, there's a thing called Shoot the Tube. And it's this, like, it's kind of like only the locals know, but basically it's like this this corrugate tube that takes water from the mountains, and it goes down into like a little reservoir, and you can shoot the tube, you can ride down it, and you get an inner tube and you ride down it, and just the locals know. But you ever had one of those things? You're like, oh, you ever shot the tube? Oh, I shot the tube. You shot the tube? Oh yeah, I shot the tube. So ask the experts. But get deeper than just the experiences. What changes do you see on the horizon? Ask the mayor. Go like, what do you want for this town? How many of you have met the mayor of your town? I'm just curious. Go for it. Go meet him. Just set up an appointment. Say, hey, I want to help this town be a greater town. How can we serve? Ask him things like, give me three people who love this community. Understand it. What are some significant events? For us, it's the Olympics. Who's moved here? What are the leading industries? We took a vision trip just recently with 40 people, 20 from the state, 20 from outside the state. I'm telling you, as we drove around Utah, meeting about, I think it's 13 different church connections, and man, I was so helped in my understanding of Utah and meeting people that have been serving for all this time. Connect with the experts, and then immerse in the culture. You know, you can read the statistical data, you can meet with a public official, but man, you can still not experience the urgency of the matter. The Apostle Paul, in Acts 17, he was aware and bothered by the idols of Athens. I mean, his spirit, verse 16, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw the city was full of idols. He sought out the religious leaders, verse 17, reasoned the synagogue with the Jews and the devout persons. He was willing to confront and listen to the philosophers, the Epicurean, the Stoic, conversed with him. And he walked the city and observed the passions, for as I passed along and observed the objects of your worship. Like, walk the city. Maybe do a prayer walk. Drive the city. Just recently, one of our appliances broke big time. Tried to fix it, couldn't fix it. We had to buy a brand new one. This just like last week, and I'm trying to go down to the Lowe's, and Siri, take me to Lowe's in Sandy, Utah. Well, it heard Sandy, Utah. I'm just driving. I get to the middle of Sandy, Utah. I've never been there. I've never been to Sandy, Utah, that section. And I was looking around, and there was all sorts of, like, high culture stuff. I mean, like, really nice performing theaters. And I was like, oh, I never knew this was even here. Like, drive the city. Like, drive through the neighborhoods. Drive through the hood. Drive through the rough sections. Don't you dare stand behind your pulpit and not know the people that live 5 miles from you. How else do you bleed for them? How else do you pray for them? How else do you cry for them? How else do you relate to them? Like, put boots on the ground and go walk around. This isn't just for a church planner, is it? This is for all of us. To know the city, know the idols, experience it. Let me just show you how we did this in Salt Lake City, and then we're going to be done. I thought I was going to have 5 minutes of questions. I don't think we will, but I will stick around. There we go. So we've done two surveys, 2012, 2018, and we figure out that there is, by the way, I tried to, like, make sure none of the sheets of paper that you have with all this data doesn't have sensitive stuff on it, but I may have missed something. Can you not share that with anyone? I mean, this could come across, some of these things could come across offensive to the people that we were researching. So do us a favor and don't kill our relationships. All right. So, there's 80, about 89, now 90. Okay, somebody added another one. About 90 churches in Salt Lake City that are remotely connected to evangelicalism. And so in that, we did some internet searches and just began to really figure out, who they are and what's going on. I mean, that's, I don't think I have that. I don't have that sheet up. But we did, internet, figure out what's their associations, what are they connected to, et cetera. We were able to phone call half of those and actually do an interview with them. And we've been meeting more and more as we can. And throughout that, what we've been doing is we've been kind of plotting out who are we like? I mean, who do we identify with? Who's on the same mission, And, we took those 90 churches, and you could cut them right in half. The first half was just people that are just so far out that it just doesn't connect. The next, there's 40 that were relatively close within your conservative evangelicalism and kind of, I don't know what you call it, but your thinking fundamentalism, area. You know, that kind of that middle ground of people that not the crazies on one side and not the crazies on the other. And that's 40 in there. And but you cut that in half because half of those are not really doing anything. They're just kind of barely making or they're dying. And we came up with about 20 churches that are somewhat, connected because, and what should that tell us? That should tell us, well, we don't really want to plant right on top of those, do we? And in fact, we came up with, ways to delineate and a little scorecard. That's why this could be offensive because, like, if we're giving a score to another church, I mean, it's like we don't even know if our data is totally true. You know what I mean? That's why, but this is just an internal document. But theological concerns, major theological concerns, evangelical with primary differences, evangelical with minor differences, philosophical. I gave you kind of a neutered version of this. Missional health, geographical consideration. But what it did is it just gave us a way to think through what are the churches around us doing? What are they like? This was the phone survey. I think illustration number three. The questions. Oh, it's not coming up. Oh, there it is. So when our phone interviewer was on the phone, they would just type in the answers, right? And they're just talking through this. You could do this. You could call and say, "Hey, I'm over at so and so church. I'm just curious. What's going on? I want to know what's going on. What's your heartbeat? Come up with your own questions." But this is just to help you figure out your questions. Our questions were driven by where should we plant. There's so few churches in that section of 1.3 million people that we're just trying to find spots to plant. And so there's the questions of that. And what that did is it would populate, and this is easy to do. That form would then populate this response, and this is where people would just add some of the things that they'd ask them. What's your attendance on an average Sunday? So Awakened Church in Harriman has 40 people. They're renting a room. Who's the best to reach? Most people are first generation Christians. These are all things that begin to give us like helpful things, helpful general observations. The biggest churches, the 10 biggest churches in Salt Lake City, have 10,000 people in attendance. And guess what, guys? They're predominantly a seeker philosophy and man-centered in doctrine. That's helpful for us, isn't it? To know those facts. There's in the like-minded churches, guys, there's only 3,000 members, 3,000 people, not even members, 3,000 people attending. I mean, you start just walking away with stuff. Listen to this. One pastor said this. So you're asking, wait, where do you think we should plant a church? This guy goes, there's not one place in Salt Lake City that's oversaturated with the gospel. We could use 1,000 more. Isn't that a great quote? This guy, the entire Salt Lake Valley is needy. We could have 100 more churches here and still have people to reach. Another guy, pick an area. Everywhere is needy. Okay, what do you think that told us about those guys? Like, whether or not we're on the exact same page, would you look at those as enemies or allies? Yeah, so we're not going to punk on those people. We're not going to try to steal people from them. No way. You know what I mean? Let me just end you with this. What it gave us, though, is it gave us a map. Here's United States. We're a long ways away from Michigan. We're working on this project for Provo now, and then now up in Logan. But these are all those 90 churches right there, guys. That's all the churches in Salt Lake City. You could take away there's about half of them that maybe they're LGBTQ affirming, or there's just other issues. So then you got so now you're down to about 40. There's another 20 that just, for other reasons, maybe they're evangelical, but with major theological or philosophical differences, like maybe egalitarian or, heavy charismatic. It's just not going to work. You know, we're just not going to be able to partner. So now you got about 20 churches. Compared to. You know, every one of those symbols is a chapel. And the way it works for Mormonism is every chapel has three or six. Depends if they're a single or a double ward. A single or double chapel has three wards, and every ward has about 300 people. So the minimum, every one of those black dots is about 900 to 1,000 people. This is Gospel Hope, the church we're just revitalizing. It's just so stark. You get off the interstate, and as you drive down this road right here, you just see church, and you can see as you drive down, you actually can see these right here, this group, and you can see a couple of the steeples here, and you drive down, and you're just like Mormon church, Mormon church, Mormon church, and you're so thankful that this church now has 130 people meeting. Praise God. There were about 30, 50 last year, and they're 130. But you pass thousands. You know, this is like soul-stirring stuff. And your community is the same way. Your community has its own idols. Your community has its own passions. Your community has its own needs. We cannot be a people that waste our life. We need to be a people that invest our life. Do the research. Talk to the experts. Walk the city. Really pray in humility. Up. Be humble. Go in. And then exegete. Go out. And may God help us reach people. Can I pray God's blessing? Lord, would you please take these brothers and sisters. And Lord, I pray that you would help us to know the people that you've called us to reach. And Lord, would we do it with all of our might. Lord, free us from our own idols. Dislodge us from inward fearful focus. Give us the grace, Lord, to reach those around us with the gospel of Jesus Christ. In Jesus' name, amen.